This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
Swing and a drive to left field. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Two-run homer, Wilson Contreras.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
Now we're in a transition a little bit. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We, of course, are broadcasting through the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We sincerely thank them for that. We want to thank our video operator, our live stream video operator, Connor O'Donnell. Connor, a good man, does great work, and we want to thank everyone that is connected to the program, and thank you for calling and texting and emailing.
And most of all, thank you for listening on this White Sox Thursday.
That was a fun show to talk about some of the glorious action from that game last night, and we want to thank our executive producer, the man who loses many a bet. He is Dustin William Rhodes.
Call your sons, call your daughters.
And Ray Diaz, one of God's great men, just a glorious performance today. Ray, thank you.
Carlos Rodon has thrown a no-hitter.
I get really emotional thanking Ray. And Sean Sears helped out in the studio, too. Thank you, Sean.
Real basic one to start with, just describe the feeling. Describe the feeling on that last ground ball to Moncada and everything after, I guess.
Can't believe this is happening. That's kind of what it was.
I think he felt like a sweepstakes winner, like we do every morning when we get a chance to welcome in Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi, our beloved colleagues. Guys, good morning.
Morning, Dan and Layla.
God bless
morning.
You.
Morning.
How's everybody doing?
Good. I think we have some connection issues on Layla's end, just FYI, that's being worked through as we speak. But, yeah, wow. And we really, when we think of it, we should thank Carlos Rodon and everyone involved for giving us something positive so we can not talk about that absolute Bulls faceplant yesterday and the Cubs being completely unwatchable. To not have to talk about that for a little while is really a blessing.
We talked about the fact that we didn't have to talk about that.
That's what I'm thinking. Thank you.
I got to tell you, that Bulls game was beyond embarrassment, and the Cubs game, I guess we just, you know, take a nod to the pitcher. Okay.
No.
Whatever.
He was good, but that the Shelby Miller experience had me wanting to just immolate myself. I mean, it was really that's like rage quit.
It.
You know, you do the rage quit with the remote, and then you open the MLB app on your phone because you're like, I can't quit you, and you're starting to look at it like, oh Hello. God, he walked out. Then you turn it back on.
Hey,
Layla.
Hey, Layla.
Hi, guys. I'm on the phone with Rich Wyatt. I don't know what the issue is, but I'm here.
I love Rich.
Rich. He's a magician.
Oh,
he's a sorcerer.
He's unbelievable. He's fixed everything just by being rich.
See, Layla, this is what you get for working overtime. This is what you get for doing extra shows. You ruin the technology for the next morning.
Yeah. I had a problem getting on last night, too, for no apparent reason. So clearly nobody wants me to talk about this no-hitter.
That was great. You and Lawrence jumped on, did a post-game reaction show, a special little bonus coverage, because that was worth the effort. It was one of those nights that could be, you know, the highlight of a great season, but they don't get much better than that.
You know, the most rewarding part of it was not even actually talking about the no-hitter. It was hearing from fans who were so happy that they were finally at the game and that they got to witness what they did, as if it wasn't cathartic enough to just go to the game. To be there for that event was really special. Like, I really enjoyed all the fans calling in who were on their way home, who just wanted to celebrate being at a game and being at that game in particular.
I we always talked about stuff like that. When you heard this was, you know, call your sons, call your daughters. Do you beeline to the stadium? Do you get, well, like now you can't, right? So, but it, there have been past occasions where I've always thought, like, God, you know, the only problem is by the time I hit the Ryan, the no-hitter's gone and the perfect game is blown, or I'm somehow putting the Bilecki on him just by trying to turn up. It was glorious to know, just stay planted and stay awake, and I was going to enjoy all of it.
And the way they handled it on the broadcast, we'll talk to Jason Benetti about it a little later on in the show, but just the fact that how unafraid they are to talk about what's happening and none of that old garbage. And I know that we're sort of past that. It gets back to the Mark Burley story when he was sitting there on the bench like, what? Why wouldn't anybody talk to me? Just because I have a no-hitter going? You know, the fact that some of that old silliness has been debunked, it's what I used to hate, was when you're doing your audience a disservice, you're doing your viewers or listeners a disservice by not telling them that something special could be happening, and that way you miss out on that exactly that communal feel, that shared moment that makes it so special.
And you're right. They did jinx the perfect game. You're right, Dan. They jinxed the perfect game. That's what happened.
I will say, and you guys know this from talking to athletes, that a lot of times it's out of courtesy for what they know about the athlete. Because I've definitely wanted to talk to players about hitting streaks before, and they want nothing to do with it because they get mad if you bring it up. So sometimes it's out of courtesy of the working relationship. But it was nice to see that wasn't happening last night.
Well, I think a play-by-play guy has a responsibility to the viewer more so than to the player.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you heard that last night reflected, and you're right, Dan. It was nice and refreshing because I don't know. And I don't know that everybody is there yet based on some of our texts this morning and some of the reaction. I think people are still feel like if you talk about it, you therefore jinx it. But I think
those
that
people
was
are idiots. Ignore
but,
them.
But, and plus, it was an unjinxable moment because Ruby, the tarot card reader, had put her blessing on this. So I'm sure it was because of the sage spray.
That was the best text we got, that MLB is looking into the no-hitter because of residue of sage on the baseball. I thought that was just classic stuff, you know. The sage affected the game.
And has Ethan Katz been available yet? Has he spoken anywhere?
We did talk to him on inside the clubhouse one Saturday morning about a month ago, but he has not been real accessible to my knowledge. I haven't seen a lot from him. I would love to hear, number one, what changes he made. We talked to James Fegan about specifically to Carlos Rodon. And secondly, didn't you wonder what he said to Rodon before the ninth inning?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, Don Cooper would be all over the airwaves today. Right, and I would love to hear. This is a great story, and Ethan Katz is front and center in what's going on here. And obviously, it's about Carlos and his work, but you've got a brand new pitching coach after 20 years, and you've got this reclamation project. And Tony La Russa was asked directly about it last night and couldn't answer a thing. He just sort of fumbled through the. I don't know. You'd have to talk to him. Okay. I want to talk to him. Let's talk to him. Let's hear from him. Because there's all sorts of really fascinating baseball things that we need to find out. There's real work that was done here. I'm still really curious about it.
I know that he's talked about Rodon's mechanics as far as the crossbody throw, and we've discussed a lot about the legs. But that doesn't mean necessarily that you go from what he's gone through to a no-hitter. So, yes. Completely agree. We don't want to be piecing together previous information in order to have the discussion we're having today.
Well,
I hope we
something about
him.
The specifics that they changed, though, created an increase in velocity that you saw when Rodon's hit 99 in the ninth inning. I mean, these are questions that would be fun to answer or have answered. And Ethan Katz struck me based on the one time Bruce and I talked to him, you know, like you might expect, very matter of fact. No nonsense, pretty direct, and probably not somebody who has dealt a lot with, you know, a spotlight as bright as it is now. So, but right now, take a bow, go around. This is the result of some of your hard work.
Yeah, exactly. I think we all just want to know how this happened and what you did to get there. So that's definitely worth discussing. This is the good stuff. This isn't the bad stuff.
God, it was great stuff. I got to tell you, it was just so much fun. I loved that the Indians were not going to play along with just letting him have a perfect game, that they were fighting all the way, and the play at first base that was just
Every time I've rewatched the Abreu play, I think he's going to blow out his knee. Every single time.
The straight leg, the violence of it,
his age and general inflexibility. I mean, it's just, I don't want to watch it anymore. It was a great play, but I'm still scared every time I see it.
And I wonder how he feels this morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's going to see the replay and go down.
Let's see if he has the day off or not in a 110 start after that night game.
I'm worried about the whole lineup, Layla. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm just worried about it now, and I'm like, oh, here we go.
Well, clearly because of your mean Mercedes' performance last night, we can't have that on back-to-back evenings. And heaven forbid we have it against one of the better pitchers, you know, the night before. So I assume he'll be seated today.
Okay, but by the way, did you hear Ozzie postgame? He was giddy on NBC Sports Chicago, but he did suggest this, and I took note of it because I thought, okay, I've come up with some, you know, outlandish lineup suggestions. At least they've been called outlandish by my partner here, but I've never suggested what Ozzie did: Mercedes in left field, Vaughn at first base, and Abreu as the designated hitter.
I always say it's left field. What's the worst thing that happens? And I've never really.
Andrew Vaughn makes the outs.
We had a texter. We had a texter who said, "Were you more nervous that Vaughn was out there, or that if Aloy had been out there?"
Oh God! If Aloy, I'm nervous that he's going to hurt Luis Robert. But now, correct me if I'm wrong. They did not optimize the defense late. Vaughn was still out there, right?
Yes. Yes. No. Right. We talked about it as it was ongoing. We were in a little conversation on text, and we were. I asked David, like, "Do you take Vaughn out here? Like, don't you kind of have to be?"
Why didn't they?
I think he was doing okay, and they didn't. I don't know. Maybe
he had five putouts, but Dan, I had the same reaction. You take Mendick, you put him at shortstop. You take Lurie, you put him in left field, and you give Vaughn a C, even though he's made five putouts. You don't test that in the ninth inning of a perfect game.
I just thought that's what
maybe
you're
supposed
to do.
Maybe you don't change in the ninth inning. Maybe you don't. I don't know what the universal rules of unwritten baseball that
I don't
Tony
know. Baseball's weird. Baseball just gets weird. And there's been, look, in the history of some of these White Sox performances, we know that Lucas Giolito by game score was one of the great no-hitters ever. We went through it right the day after it happened right here in transition. And there was the Mark Burley perfect game. When you look at the defenders they had out there, and you looked at guys who were playing out of position, and they had a terrible defensive lineup. Guy throws a pitcher who pitches to contact, ends up throwing a perfect game against a team that had an OPS that Rays team and an OPS of over 800 as a team going into that game. And things happen, and that's why when Rodon reacted the way he did after he hits Perez in the foot, and he didn't get all grindy, screamy, sweaty, twitchy. He's like, you know what?
That's why he got the no-hitter. I mean, how many times have you seen a guy fall apart after something like that happens when, you know, the stress of it and all that? He was playing with house money, and he seemed pretty happy about everything, and he was kind of chuckling about it. And I love the post game. Right after the game, he goes on, and they're like, you know, what went through your head? And he said, the toe pitch. I thought that was the toe ball. I thought that was hysterical. He was just having a laugh with the whole thing.
They call it a back foot slider for a reason.
Yeah, that's right.
Amen to that. You are supposed to wrap it. But I just really loved his entire self-awareness, because when we talk about the Abreu play, that's the same way he discussed it. He has that actual sympathy and empathy for overcoming his injuries to say, my first concern was I was worried about Abreu and his knee or if he had gotten injured. That was my first worry. And you
Smart
hear that
guy.
Real sense of relief when you hear from him after the game.
I was relieved that Rodon didn't try to make the play himself and get too mixed up so there was a collision. You know, it's like, stop!
This just sounds like all of us are just anticipating White Sox defense when we have these discussions.
I said this earlier. There was a ball. It was like a pop-up, and Nick Madrigal went back. And for a second, I thought he was going to, like, crumble and fall. Like, he, for a quarter of a second, I was like, get your balance, man!
You know what ran through my mind? You know what ran through my mind? Do you remember the Lamar Hoyt near-perfect game that was against the Yankees? I can see it in my mind's eye to this day. Don Mattingly,
painkillers, Dan, at that point.
Don Mattingly, little pop up over short, and Jerry Dibzinski just gets, you know, all roads lead back to the Dibber when it comes to the base running mistake against Baltimore. And in that game, and I need the White Sox old heads to remind me here exactly what happened. It looked like he could have had it. It looked like he could have had it, and the route wasn't quite true enough, and that was the only base runner in the entire game for Dewey Lamar Hoyt.
La Russa, also the manager that day.
Yes, yes. Still, I'm still mad about it. And La Russa was asked about, you know, Bruce Levine was sort of leading him into these questions to talk about his history with no hitters, and it's like Tony couldn't remember any. It's like all he remembers, he said, he goes, yeah, Jack Morris shut us out in 84. That was no fun. Well, no, he no-hit you. And that was the only one. Like, this guy's been a part on both sides of no-hitters going back a century, and he couldn't even answer. It was really weird.
Did you see that statistic from the Elias Sports Bureau that was the first no-hitter against Tito, a team managed by Terry Francona, and that was the third longest he had gone 3,146 games without being on the losing end of a no-hitter, and that was the third longest streak in the history of Major League Baseball. Like, how absurd is that statistic, and how wild is it that is something that people know by the time the game is over or the next morning? It's just crazy.
Did you think the strike zone was a bit elastic there when Rodon needed it, and did Doug Eddings do the White Sox a favor behind the plate?
Yeah, just a little.
Okay. Well, I think isn't Doug Eddings the umpire from the AJ Pierzynski drop third? Yeah.
Yep.
So he's done the White Sox some favors before. He was the one who was doing press conferences talking about his mechanic and how it had to change. But he's a part of White Sox history for those with good memories.
So, but I will say this. I mean, we've seen a lot of games where hitters expand the strike zone whether or not it's a no-hitter, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're swinging at a lot of stuff no matter what.
I thought that the penultimate batter, that third called strike was a little bit, you know, favorable. But I didn't think the whole night was something. I thought Carlos pitched very well, and I thought they played great behind him, and I thought it was a glorious triumphant moment for the human spirit.
It was after Perez got hit on his clown shoe that you thought that Eddings gave him.
Did you notice he had
break,
that bozo shoe on when he walked up, the one shoe?
Size 17.
Yeah. Well, I've found this from thisdayinbaseball.com, and it does say, has Lamar Hoyt faces 27 batters in a 3-0 one-hit shutout. Don Mattingly has the only hit, an opposite field blooper in the seventh that caught the swirling wind. Jerry Dibzinski said, it was about as fast as I could run. I had an angle, but the ball started to descend before I could get there. And he faced the minimum 21st pitch strikes of the 27 batters he faced. Carlton Fisk said it was the best game he ever caught. And that's what I was just thinking that when I saw Nick Madrigal trying to get a bead on it, that I would be lying if I said that didn't cross my mind.
What have you today?
Well, we're going to enjoy this, and then we're going to also have Ian Happ is going to make his weekly appearance. We've got Jason Benetti joining us. I think we're going to squeeze in Cody Westerlund trying to make some sense of that Bulls turd last night. God, it's the first time I've gotten mad, really mad at the Billy Donovan Bulls was last night. So we'll squeeze that in as well. And we have some possible surprises because we're celebrating a little bit of baseball and White Sox history today.
All right, guys.
Have a great show.
Have a great show.
Thank you very much.